Hey, yo, what is a cipher?
That's the way that New York feels, the way the street runs, the way the subway feels when it runs by you.
The knowledge of the cipher is to enlighten you.
Where you think the cipher come from?
The gods.
Because you tried to jump the cipher and it goes this way.
Welcome to The Cipher, a weekly podcast where we bring you conversations with the most interesting figures in hip-hop and culture. I'm your host, Sean Sotero. This week, we talk to Mack Wilds. Mack is an actor, singer, and rapper best known for his work on TV shows like The Wire and 90210, and most recently for his starring role in Adele's video for Hello. But he's no slouch as a musician either. His 2013 debut album, New York, A Love Story, executive produced by Salaam Remy, received a Grammy nomination for Best Urban Contemporary Album. Mack brought his passions for acting and hip-hop together in VH1's upcoming TV movie about the hip-hop industry in 1990, right as it was beginning to explode, The Breaks. The Breaks, which airs on January 4th, is a must-see film that went out of its way to keep it real, casting hip-hop personalities like Method Man and Prince Paul, getting DJ Premier to do the film's music, and having Fonte write its lyrics. It's a fictional story, but it's based on the definitive nonfiction history of the rap industry, The Big Payback, written by our episode 64 guest, Dan Charnas, who also co-wrote the film. Mack plays DV, an aspiring producer and DJ who finds a talented artist to work with, but may have bitten off more than he can chew in the process. We met up with him at VH1's offices in Midtown, several days after press screenings of The Breaks in New York City. If you enjoy The Cipher, make sure you subscribe to it on your podcast app of choice. That way, you'll get every episode as soon as it comes out. You'll also be able to check out our back catalog. If you enjoy this show, for example, you should check out our interview with another actor and musician, now starring in Hamilton, Christopher Jackson, on episode 73. You can find more information about this episode, including a list of the songs we play, at thecyphershow.com. While you're there, make sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter to keep track of everything that's going on with us. And now, here's the only person ever to co-star with both Method Man and Shannon Doherty, Mack Wilds.
Obviously, I saw you a few days ago at the premiere of The Breaks.
Yes, sir.
It was a great, great
movie. I was about to ask you, what
movie.
Did you think about it?
I thought it was great. And in fact, the thing I wanted to start out with is you play an SB-12 pretty convincingly.
Nah. You keep doing you, let me do me, and you know it's going to be dope, all right?
Word.
You know that. Come on, one more time.
Yo, they call me Joe Rock. When I start to rock, I never stop.
The actual SB-1200 drum machine that Mack's character DV, an aspiring producer and DJ, plays in The Breaks was originally owned by West Coast hip-hop radio pioneers Sway and King Tech. They sold it years ago to their frequent caller, Dan Charnas, who also happens to be a co-writer on The Breaks.
Where'd you learn to do that?
Man, honestly, us being hip-hop fans, I know I died getting my training, but I got my training for this from Pete Rock and DJ Premier.
Wow, that's okay. Those
yeah,
are
you know,
okay people.
Okay,
from.
Guys,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, right, because your beats in the movie are from
Premier. Yeah, from Primo.
Legendary producer Christopher DJ Premier Martin, a.k.a. Prem or Primo, has a long-running connection with Dan Charnas. They go back to Dan's first job in hip-hop, interning at Wild Pitch Records, which released a debut album, No More Mr. Nice Guy, by Premier's group Gangstar in 1989. Charnas was even on set for Gangstar's Manifest video that year.
So him teaching me like about the SB 1200 and even Pete showing me he said that was one of his favorites to use. Yeah, it was dope.
That's amazing. What did you think of when you first heard Premier's beats that are supposed to be yours in the film?
I still don't have the right words to say my feelings. It was like a mixture of too excited and feeling like the man, like somewhere dead smack in the middle of that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things when I talked to Dan Charnas, he was so excited about, was like, we got Premier and he's doing stuff that sounds like then, and it's Fonte's lyrics, and like, mm-hmm. he was super stoked about that.
Fonte, shout out to Fonte, man.
Fonte Coleman of The Foreign Exchange and a former groupmate with episode 101 guest rapper Big Pooh when they were both in Little Brother wrote the lyrics for most of the songs and battle raps in the breaks.
That man is a rapper for real, bro. Yeah. Like, he is definitely one of my top, man.
Yeah. So how did you prepare for that role at all? Obviously, you had so many people on set who were around for that era. You had, you know, Dan's book. Like, yes. Did you read his book?
I did. Yes, we definitely did. You know, it's just research, you know. And I'm definitely constantly inspired by that time and everything that comes out of it. But everything that came out of it. But I think for me, it was just a lot of research, man. Just reading and watching the videos again, immersing myself in the music, just being around it so that I understood what it felt like, what it was, so that the feelings that I portrayed weren't fake, mm-hmm. you know?
Was it hard to kind of make that metal leap to a time when hip-hop wasn't, you know, omnipresent? Because, you know, the events of the movie took place when you were a baby, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of hard, but it's just, in my head, me being a hip-hop head from now, you know, from my generation, even thinking about a time where hip-hop wasn't on the radio is preposterous. So I can even understand how the kids were fighting for it even more, because they're like, yo, like, this is the music that we live. Like, this is what runs through our veins. How is it not being played on the radio?
Our audience is not interested in the noise you call hip-hop.
It's not noise. It is the most important musical
movement. Enough. David, now I appreciate your enthusiasm, but stick to getting my coffee.
Yeah. So it just gave me a lot more perspective.
Yeah. And your father in the film is
yes.
Method Man.
The man himself.
Dad, how you gonna play me in front of my artist, man?
Is that what you calling that boy?
He is an artist.
Yeah, and I'm the president.
But look, I told you, if you would have just left it in the driveway, I would have brought it in when I was finished.
You think I want to hear that noise when I get in from work? Huh? When I'm home, session done.
But this is real, Dad. I'm trying to finish the album here.
Finish it when I'm at work. Make sure you take the garbage out by the time I get up.
M-E-T-H-O-D, man. Yeah.
You got a long-standing relationship with all the Wu-Tang guys, right? Can you tell me a little bit about that, going back to Park Hill?
Yeah, man. I actually... I was born and raised in Park Hill and in Stapleton. So, like, when I was, you know, living in Park Hill, my dad used to own a barbershop out there. So even, you know, my dad, him being, I guess, one of the main barbershops in the neighborhood, everybody would come in. So, you know, Meth, Ray, Ghost, you got RZA. Like, I remember all of these guys when I was growing up, and, you know, they all knew me. As Paul's son, little Paul or whatever. So
yeah.
Definitely grew up with all of those guys, man.
And that's changed. You know, the relationship obviously has changed over years to the point where Meth asked you to be on his new album.
Yes.
Meth man, Corey Gun, go bang. Street life got a knife, homie, run your chains. Mac.
Riding around the city and we do our thing. From a city that be known to do crazy things.
You already.
What was it like to get that call to see, like, it's gone from, you know, you asked them to be on your record.
Where are you from? So tell me, where do you stay? In the land of the wild things.
You see them killers from the slums. If they feeling for the sleep, we kill them from the jump.
It's the wild thing.
You see the shoddy.
But now, like, they're actually reaching out to you.
It was great, man. You know, it feels full circle. And, you know, I'll do anything for them guys, man. Like, I feel like I'm a kid who was raised off of Wu-Tang and, yeah. you know, everything. So... it's an honor, you know, just to even be thought about, you know, so it's dope.
Yeah. And what's your favorite Wu project not by one of the core members?
Not by one of the core members? Man, it would have to be like a Killer Army project.
Yeah, Killer Army, bounty killers, in the street kids shivers, shells are through your liver, get caught close to rivers, motive and style are superior from Charlotte to Nigeria, spoken through the monitor, with the wisdom for dynamic professor, lyrical cannon.
Or one of the new one that they just put something out with some new kids from Staten Island. They call it a Wu-Tang Parental Advisory.
I used to hit the train with the spray can. Uh-huh. Now we hit them white girls with the spray tan. Right. Italian joints that call niggas eggplant. I'm just trying to fill in the gap. Straight hand. This is
And they're pretty good.
Nice. And, you know, going back to kind of your youth, I know you did a little bit of graffiti as a kid that maybe got you in some trouble.
Yeah.
What was your graffiti name?
Mac 11.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Makes sense.
Yeah, man.
Nice. And, you know, your dad, obviously, you mentioned Paulo at the barbershop. He was also a singer. What kind of stuff did he sing?
It was more soulful stuff, you know. Definitely one of the premier, like, R&B soul singers of Staten Island.
Nice.
So, you know, he would gig around with his friends, and, you know, he would sometimes let me come to the Village Underground and watch him sing and everything. So, yeah.
Nice. And what does he think of your take on R&B?
He loves it. You know, he just loves that I'm doing it my own way, and that I appreciate that.
Yeah. And so your music, obviously, you know, you had a debut EP.
Yes.
Remember.
Yeah.
Where you're rapping as much as singing.
Yeah, man.
I guess it started with a broken chick and broken promises and wishes where the story sits. Looking for a fix, trying to convince myself that this is actually something I probably miss.
And then the record comes out, New York City, New York, a love story. Where you're mostly singing.
Talking fly, sing your mind, way more than what you really be, so mama be, I understand, hope you do the same,
You rap on maybe two or three tracks.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see yourself doing more rapping?
On the next album?
The next, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think the last album, it was just the place where I was, you know, the music that we were producing. I felt like a lot of times, like even with Remember, the beats hit hard, but me rapping on them made them hit harder. Whereas with New York, A Love Story, the beats hit so hard, we had to soften them up by singing on them, like Henny.
And I'm smoother than a shot of Hennessy. If I hit it, then you go, remember me.
Like Wild Things, you know, it's, you know, there's certain tracks that definitely need rapping on it, or that I'm more prone to rap on. But yeah, I think you'll see a lot more of that this next project.
Yeah. And the Remember, it's really good. I liked it a lot. Yeah.
Thank you.
So that whole project, like the title, the fact that you released it on November 5th,
the cover
with the Guy Fawkes mask, kind of a V for Vendetta thing going on.
Yeah, man. That was when I was doing 90210, and I just wanted to get some. I wanted to let people know that I actually did music. So, it was more so like a lot of friends and family who kept on saying, yo, you got to put some music out, man. We love what we're hearing you do in the studio. I was like, all right, I'm gonna do a little project. I got you.
Yeah. And you know, in the middle of that project is this song Green Light, which is in some ways inclusive of your whole catalog, probably the most personal thing you've written. I feel like some stuff about you and how you feel about yourself kind of in relation to ways your life could have gone and stuff like that.
Somebody stop me, think I'm going insane. Wondering how life would have been had I just moved some cane. Getting me my some change, getting pop a range. Exchange whips and chains throughout the team. Yeah.
Is all in that song. What was in your head while you were writing that? Where were you at?
I think after, you know, doing a show like 90210 or anything, you know, at that time, I was very self-reflective. And, you know, I had a lot of good friends around me who, you know, I was able to bounce ideas off of and everything. So having everybody around me at that time, it was very, I was able to tap into things that I don't think I've been able to tap into like that in a while. So,
yeah. And, you know, there's the song Cold.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great tune. At the very end of that, just almost while it's fading out, you have the fresh scratch come in.
Uh-huh.
The fresh scratch heard here is one of hip-hop's longtime standbys. The source material is a voice through a vocoder saying, "This stuff is really fresh," from Fab Five Freddy's 1982 song Change the Beat. The first time it was scratched was by our episode 68 guest, Grandmixer DXT, on Herbie Hancock's song Rocket from the following year. Those two songs shared a producer, Bill Laswell, and an engineer, Martin Beese. The fresh scratch has been used hundreds of times in the ensuing decades.
What makes a DJ? What makes an MC? and the DJ that made the first scratch paved the way for Flex, Mr. C, enough of them cats.
Scratching really came to me when I heard, I guess, Rocket.
DST was the first one to use that sound. You can gauge a DJ's skills by when they use that sound.
Why did you do that? Was that just kind of a nod to like the hip-hop heads in the audience?
Absolutely. You know, I, like I said, I've always been a super duper hip-hop head. And when I first heard the beat, I remember Warren Campbell, he played it for me, and I was like, yo, we need this. Like, I want to make this so big. And as the song started to progress and, the scratches that he put into it, I was like, it was perfect. It fit perfectly.
Yeah. One other thing about that record, on Over My Head, you have that line, I want it all like that Queen song.
I want it all like that Queen song.
I want it all. I want it all. I want it all. And I want it now.
Which I thought was just such a funny, like, late period random Queen song to reference.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, I feel like I'm one of those, like, encyclopedias of useless knowledge. So I have so many different songs from different places and everything in my head. So it works for my music. Like, whenever I have to write a dope, like, metaphor or something along those lines, it just comes out at the perfect time. I'm like, perfect. Thank you for reading all those Snapple facts. Seriously.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of, you know, sampling and stuff that's been used, you know, on New York, A Love Story, a couple of the songs have beats that, you know, hip hop heads will be familiar with from songs, you know, Big Noid, Mobb Deep.
It be a buck 50. Your chance of running is infinity. Slugs leave a nigga drug like a chick slipped a Mickey. I wish I had some old treats, girl. Just a trick on you. This money ain't impressive, huh?
And then the song that, you know, beat the Jay-Z or similar beat that Jay-Z used on You, Me, Him, Her.
Exactly.
Who could believe Jigga Man, Mo Better, Mo Cheddar, foes knock the man off your polo sweater.
Back to my crib, we can get away, no photographs. Chilling all alone in my home with you on.
With those beats, were you like playing off people recognizing those songs? Were you worried, like, were you worried at all that people might not hear them as yours?
No, I think at first me and Salam, you know, we went into the studio with the idea and the mindset. Like, I was like, yo, I want to make a record that feels so authentically New York. You know, I feel like after a while, you know, New York lost its way, lost its sound. So I wanted to do something to the effect that would, I guess, re-rev up the engine that to let people know the sound that New York has.
Mm-hmm.
Not even has, because that, you know, that music, the boom bap, the way that the hip-hop felt, that's the way that New York feels, the way the street runs, the way the subway feels when it runs by you, you know, those late nights, those early mornings, that's what it feels like. So
yeah.
I wanted to recreate that. And you know, so we started digging through beats and stuff, and I was like, yo, imagine how dope it'll be to sing over Burn. Yo, man, get in the booth. That type of stuff. So
yeah.
It was fun.
Nice. And yeah, and there's a lot of, like you said, that kind of boom bap feel on that album, you know, going back to like a lot of the break beats that people were using during the golden era, even during the late 80s. You have stuff that like drums that call up Impeach the President.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have the 100 dresses in the house tonight.
It's bad chick just started waiting. The crowd parted as I made my way. I said, hey, Lord.
They'd call up, you know, Eric B for president. That I think Nautilus maybe even
yes,
works
sir.
Its way into one song.
Yeah, man. For Don't Turn Me Down.
So what is it about the golden age rap that you know, that appealed to you that you wanted to bring out?
It was just so New York to me. I think that was the biggest thing. Like, I wanted to do something, like I said, that was so authentically and so unapologetically New York that it would make people feel like you can listen to it and be in the city. Like, no matter where you are in the world, you can be in Tokyo, you can be in Bangkok, you could be in Los Angeles, you can be in San Francisco. Like, as soon as you put your headphones in, you're transported into New York City.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously I have to mention the acting side of stuff for you a little bit.
Yes,
you know,
sir.
You did 90210.
Mm-hmm.
Are we a couple? Or did you just have sex with me in Vegas just to keep me away from drugs? Look, I just need to know if you have any feelings towards me whatsoever. Because I definitely have feelings for you.
Of course I have feelings for you.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, cool.
And you were kind of like the Brandon Walsh analog.
Exactly.
On that show.
Yeah.
Did you watch the original 90210 to prepare for that?
Not to prepare for it, but my cousins and my sisters, they were huge, huge 90210 fans. Like, talk about like posters of Dylan McKay in the room. Weird. Like, I'm like, Jesus Christ. So I was kind of forced to watch it, you know, or we would fight over the remote. So I had that type of reference in my head when it came to it.
That's fine. How did they react when you got the role?
Oh, they went nuts. They went nuts. Oh, my God. Are the actual characters going to be there? Can we come to L.A. with you? Can we please be on set? Oh, my God, please. It was great. It was amazing.
Did they get to meet Kelly and Brenda?
Yeah, they definitely did. And actually, it's funny. My sister came the episode that Jason Priestley directed an episode.
Oh, wow.
Of the first season. And I remember my sister came and she couldn't even say anything to him. Like, she, like, legit, like, we're sitting here watching, like, playback and everything, and she's standing so far away, just like, it was the greatest moment. I wish I could have taken a picture of it.
That's amazing. What do you, looking back on it now as an adult, what do you think about Brandon as a character?
You know what? Looking at Brandon, he was always in the right place at the right time. You know, he was always that guy. You know, he was a great character because, to me, it showed at the time you needed that character who was always either in the middle of something or trying to save someone.
Right.
So that was Brandon to me.
Yeah.
I loved it.
And, you know, on your version of 90210, somewhere in the middle of the show, your character became a DJ.
Just don't trust those other guys.
Do you really think that I'd be interested in him over you?
I don't know. Look, the guy owns a club. I mean, he could get you a headliner gig.
Yeah, well, I can get my own gigs. We can, okay? We are a badass team.
Did that have anything to do with your input?
A little bit. I think, you know, we had a bunch of conversations about what kind of music they wanted me to do, you know, because they knew I was musically inclined, but they wanted me to sing, but I was like, I don't want it to come off corny or anything, so we can do something with music, but it doesn't necessarily have to be singing or anything like that. So it started off with DJing and then became producing. And so it was definitely from conversations that we had.
Nice. Some other stuff you've done. I noticed, I hadn't realized this till I started looking up stuff for this interview. I hadn't remembered you're in the Rock Boys video.
Yes, sir.
Speech. First of all, I want to thank my connect, the most important person with all due respect. Thanks to the duffel bag, the brown paper bag, the Nike shoe box for holding all this cash.
Okay. Actually, a scenes with Jay.
Yes, sir. Yes,
wow.
sir.
Wow. What was that? I mean, that was before a lot of this stuff, right?
It was right before I did 90210. I was about 17 years old, just finished The Wire. It was nuts. My first time meeting Jay. And he was always, like, from that day, he was amazing. We hit it off, and he's been treating me, oddly enough, like family since then.
That's great. And, you know, I read an interview with you where you said you were itching to play a bad guy.
Yeah.
Think you're going to get that chance?
Eventually. I think, you know, one thing that I love so far about my career as an actor, I love doing different roles that challenge me, things that have so, like, I can be here, I can be here. Like, I can do The Wire, I can do 90210, I can do Red Tails, I can do The Secret Life of Bees. Like, it there's no limits to where I want to stop or anything. So I think for me, you know, the next thing I want to do is, like, an action movie or, you know, to play a bad guy, to really delve deep into something a little more scary.
And, you know, one acting role you've had that has, you know, maybe been viewed more than anything is, of course, the Hello video.
Hello.
And, you know, you've talked a lot about it, how it came about. I was filmed in secret, all that stuff. The thing that's most interesting to me is, what is it like to wrap your head around the fact that something you did has been viewed like 300, 400 million times?
Oh, man. It's crazy. It's definitely crazy. I think after we've hit, I think after we hit 150 million, I was like, this, it's not going to stop, is it? It's just not going to stop, is it? It's just going to keep going. So even today, like, I think it's at like 724 million.
As of 11:45 p.m. on December 25th, 2015, barely more than a month after the single was released, Adele's Hello video had 814,184,110 views on YouTube alone.
It's nuts, but you know, I think the numbers are just showing a true testament to what hard work and putting the right people in the right place at the right time can do.
Yeah. Did you see the Saturday Night Live parody of the video?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Seen the one with the Muppets. It was all great, man. It was great. I love it. It's funny because even after the Saturday Night Live joint, like, I went home for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
You know, the whole family's around. And any time it seemed like anybody was going to get into it, I just broke out into the Hello song, just like the Saturday Night Live joint. So my mom would be like, you know, Paul, I think that you hello from the other. Just break out into it. Yeah, great.
Amazing. And, you know, we're talking actually later tonight. I will be waiting online in the rain for probably 4 hours to see Star Wars.
Yeah.
What was it like working with George Lucas on Red Tails?
Yo, he's amazing, man. And it's so funny. I think Yoda was based on him. Honestly. Seriously, like, he's a guy that he doesn't have many words. Like, he doesn't say many words. Very, very soft-spoken. But the words that he does say are sound bites. Like, it's like you can use what he says in other aspects of your life. So he's amazing, man.
Nice. And, you know, one of the things that happened with you acting is, you know, The Wire blew up. You were, I think, your sophomore year of high school. So you've been basically a public figure, you know, for the past decade now.
Yeah.
What was it like growing up in public, essentially, or as a public figure? Did you feel like you had room to kind of make the typical teenage mistakes and stuff that people aren't in the public eye do?
I think kind of. To a certain extent, I still had an opportunity to grow up. You know, growing up in Stapleton and in Park Hill, you kind of have to grow up a little faster than others, or, you know, you'll probably get washed out or, you know, thrown to the wayside. So I did feel like I grew up, you know, very, very quickly. But doing The Wire and everything since high school, the only thing I really regret is that I didn't get a chance to really enjoy high school the way that all of my friends would or did, you know?
Yeah. Speaking of growing up in Staten Island and things that have happened on Staten Island, I heard an interview you did where someone asked you about Eric Garner, and you referred to him almost unthinkingly as Big E.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know him at least by sight?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely was one of the guys that, you know, everybody knew in the neighborhood. So he was, yeah, man, Big E was a dope man. You know, he's always full of life, you know, it's crazy that anything would happen to him like that. But he was a big guy, but he was a big teddy bear. Like, everybody loved him. Everybody. It was crazy.
And, you know, we're talking only a day after mistrial was declared in the Freddie Gray case in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
So around the time of the uprising in April, you let off kind of a couple tweets about the situation in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
On April 28th, 2015, a day after Freddie Gray's funeral, clashes in Baltimore between high school students and police and the burning and looting of a CVS in West Baltimore, Mac tweeted in response. In part, his tweets read, "I've been sitting here stewing on everything going on in Baltimore. I'm hurt, I'm tired, I'm embarrassed for the world's perspective of my country. I love y'all, man. Go hug the young. Tell them they're kings and queens. Tell them they're loved."
Any thoughts about the latest development?
I think it's a travesty, man. You know, I don't know. I think things like that and everything else that's happening, all of these kids being murdered, and it just hurts. It hurts, man. Like, as a young black man myself, and trying to understand, or trying to tell other people or other young black men or young black women, like, yo, like, this is our land too. It just doesn't feel like it.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, speaking of stuff you can say, especially as someone in the public eye, right? You did mm-hmm. your song, the remix of Stand For mm-hmm. that you did, you know, mentioned police violence and also shouted out the Black Panthers.
We all try to save a real shit, but the ops are no way, so a nigga on some trill shit. I'm talking Black Panther feel shit, till we in a better place. Till my bros come home for a good night, bad bitches get us real right, till we trying to save our own lives.
And I saw an interview you did once where you said, you know, well, in my head, I'm basically a Black Panther.
Yeah.
So do you feel a kind of difference between what you think and kind of what you can say publicly as someone in your situation around issues of, like, political issues?
Certain times, you know, it's definitely a battle with myself sometimes just to make sure that what I say doesn't fall out of context.
Sure.
So I think I just battle with myself to see what should be said. Because a lot of times, you know, in the midst of a moment, you want to yell, you want to scream, you want to kick doors down. But that honestly just leaves a messy room sometimes. And if the room is already messed up, nobody's going to notice it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, to get back to the music for a second, obviously you've worked with Salaam Remy, who has done
the big homie.
Legendary things.
Salaam Remy has produced classic songs for the Fugees, Amy Winehouse, Nas, Nelly Furtado, Carlos Santana, and many, many more.
What's your process like with him? Like, help him, you know, make suggestions, collaborate on the music side? Does he help out with lyrics and melodies? Like, how does that work?
I think the whole process is a collaborative effort. It's one of those things where he lets me work because he knows I can write. So he lets me write. And if I need any help, he'll definitely help out. And I know he can produce, but if there's anything that I hear that I want a little different or anything, he gives me free rein to actually come in and speak on it and tell him what I like and what I don't like. So it's a very open, collaborative, creative effort. But we both know our battle axes. So when it's time for war, we rock out. You know, we allow each other this room and space to rock out.
Yeah. And you have a new, you know, new song, Love in the 90s.
Yeah.
Inspired, at least in part, by the breaks, right?
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's crazy because, and I tell the story all the time now, but we started to write it in January. Like, it was me, it was my friend Elijah Blake, and James Poyser did the keys, and Salaam just did a beat behind it. So it wasn't even fully realized yet. So we listened to it, and I was like, ah, it's cool. And we did a bunch of other songs. I was like, it's cool, but it's not, I don't know. We left it alone. Did the breaks, finished it, and just the mindset that I was in and the place mentally, it was just like, let me go back and listen to these songs and listen to them. And I started to hear different things in Love in the 90s that I was like, man, we need to redo this. Like, we need to recut it. So I went back in, recut it. Salaam, listening to it with fresh ears too, he was like, you know what? I want to call in a couple people. Called in Teddy Riley, called in Scott Storch. Juiced up the beat even more and made it into what it is today.
Were you in the studio when Teddy Riley came through?
I was.
Wow, what was that like? He's the man, right? Like,
he's the man. He's the Messiah. It's you know, for R&B music, that man created that whole wave of New Jack Swing that took over the world, man.
Teddy Riley started producing at only 14 years old. His first hit at 17 was Kool Moe Dee's 1986 song Go See the Doctor. But he is best known for creating the sound of New Jack Swing in the late 1980s and early 90s with his hit songs for artists like Bobby Brown, Keith Sweat, Johnny Kemp, and his own groups Guy and Blackstreet. Riley also co-produced much of Michael Jackson's 1991 album Dangerous, including the hit songs Remember the Time and Jam.
It was great, you know, just even meeting him and his energy. I remember on one of the songs that didn't make the cut for the album, he was listening to it. He's like, yo, Mac, I don't want you to get too excited or anything, but yo, you sound like Michael Jackson on this. You're giving me complete Michael Jackson vibes, like everything you're doing in it. And I'm sitting in the car, like, on the outside, I'm like, oh, man, yo, thanks, man. On the inside, I'm screaming like a little girl. A little girl. Fanning myself. It was terrible.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Terrible.
Well, speaking of that, did he hear your Michael Jackson cover?
He did, and he and
which of course he produced and he co-wrote.
Exactly, he said the best thing. He was like, "I'm not mad at it," and that's all I wanted. That's all I wanted. I didn't want him to be like, you know, oh my God,
thing.
It's amazing. Yeah. Nah, because I know what him and Mike did in that studio session. I just wanted him to be like, "I'm not mad at it." So he, hey, man,
amazing. But, and you know, you have this. You have a song that. You know, didn't make the record. I saw this on your sound called The Girls Playing Tricks.
Yeah.
Kind of a homage to, you know, Ghetto Boys, Mind Playing Tricks on me.
Yeah, man.
I'm staring at the woman on the corner. It's fucked up when your mind's playing tricks on you.
So I say, girls playing tricks on me. Tricks on me. And I just say, girls playing tricks on me. Tricks on me.
That song came out when you were two. So how did you become aware of the Ghetto Boys tune?
I'm just a fan of hip hop, man. So even at a young age, I had older brothers who were so heavily doused and versed in what hip hop knowledge was that it was just crazy. Like I was able to learn songs from generations way before me.
Nice. And you have, you know, Bonnie and Clyde, another new single, which is very different for you. Very sparse, like there's long sections without drums.
Oh, no, you try to do me like you do. Frontin' hard like fucking me ain't cheating, baby, shame on you.
How'd that come about?
It was honestly, the song was a love child between me and one of my homeboys, pause. But, but nah, it was you know, like I think we got into the studio, and he played me the beat, and you know, in my studio sessions, like I like lights low and you know probably some candles going, just vibes. Like I like good vibes. I just try to get the best music out. So listening to that beat, I was like, yo man, like there's not much in it, but it feels like there's so much here. And I took it and I was like, yo, let me mess with it for a little while. And just the song just came out, man. And as I was writing, he started putting more into the beat, adding the drums while I was doing the chorus. And it was dope. It came together.
Nice. You think it's going to be on the new album?
Yeah, absolutely.
Nice.
You know, we revamped it a little more. So we have a different ending to it. So
okay.
It's definitely going to be on the album.
Nice. And, you know, obviously you're from Staten Island.
Yes,
what
sir.
What in the borough should we be aware of hip-hop-wise? Who should we be checking for?
Oh, man, in Staten Island, there's a bunch of dudes. Like, there's a dude from Park Hill. His name is Spank, Just Business.
She had tattoos she only wanted Joe to see. Make her want to settle down and grow old with me. Room 112, where the players dwell. With a whole bunch of baddies who else okay, Michelle. Keep it real, my...
He's dope. There's a crew in Staten Island called Tribe Gang that's really good.
Yeah. You can see about what I wear, bitch, I wear. And Sadie switching gears, it ain't fair. Blowing loud.
There's another guy who I feel is one of the best rappers that I know, but he's just scared to come out. His name is Fox.
All right, well, Fox, if you're listening,
I know.
Let's put some music out, man.
Please,
come on.
Man. Come on. Stop playing. He's dope. He's dope as hell, man.
And, you know, I do have to ask about The Wire at least a little bit. At what point did you realize that your character was going to kind of have the end he did?
Do you know who I am?
Name is Vincent. Used to be Marlo's bank. But Marlo ain't around no more. And you still moving money for other players. So... thinking some of that money need to be mine.
Shit. You just a boy.
That's just a knee.
I don't think I ever did. I don't think I ever knew he was gonna have the end that he did until probably we got the last script. And even after that, I don't think I understood the impact that we would have on the world or the culture until I was about like 19, 20. Like, because to me, when I was doing it, it was just like, we just having fun.
Right, you're going to work.
I'm going to work. I got a chance to get out of school. I don't have to see my teachers. Like, I'm good. Like, it's fun. You know, I'm shooting guns and not doing homework. It was great. But I didn't realize that they were teaching me. I was getting tutelage from arguably some of the best actors in the world. And I didn't know that, everything about The Wire to me was, I didn't realize it until I was, I think, on the second season of 90210. Like, man, Jesus, I did a lot when I was young.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. You look at, you know, what everyone on that show is up to now, and, you know, everyone has gone on to such vast things. You're like, wait, you were all on one show together? Like, how is that, you know?
Yeah, it's nice, man. It's
insane,
nice.
Insane cast. I know that you are writing, you know, in addition to songs, maybe some short films as well.
Yeah, man.
What's the story with that? When can we maybe get a peek at them?
I'm actually working on one right now. Me and one of my friends back in L.A., we got one called Covers that's coming out pretty soon. We actually just shot it a few weeks ago, so we're trying to put it together now. But that one is going to be really, really dope. And you know, he's from L.A., from the jungles, so using a lot of his life story, we built a really, really dope movie. I can't wait till people see it.
Yeah. And just one or two more quick things. I know, like, when you did Red Tails,
mm-hmm.
I know there was an intense boot camp.
Ooh!
Ooh. Maybe had some people wanting to quit, right? Or go on strike
absolutely.
Or something.
Absolutely. But we all made it through. We all made it through by the skin of our teeth, I'll tell you that.
What'd they have you do?
I think just being away from your natural everyday life. You know, usually, you know, we wake up, we have the day to ourselves. If you want to lay down, we lay down. If you want to get up, you get up. If you want to go brush your teeth, wash your face, you want to go meet a girl, like, whatever you want. It's all on your, you know, whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
Check your phone, all of that. To have your life for, what was it, maybe a week, like a full 7 days, be in the hands of someone else. Take your phone away. You can only go on the phone at 10 p.m. for 15 minutes. Everybody, it's for everybody. Mind you, this isn't, it's not just regular guys. It's me, it's Neo, it's Michael B. Jordan, it's Method Man, it's guys whose lives revolve around, you know, the phone calls that we get or anything, like, to take us away from our lives, our livelihood. It humanized every single one of us so much and stripped us all of our egos so that when we did the movie, we were legit brothers. Like, we've seen each other throw up. We've had to fight and get each other dressed to make sure that we didn't have to do 20 burpees. It was a lot. So it really brought us all together, man.
Nice. And, you know, I know you're a big Looney Tunes fan.
Huge.
All right. Who is your who's the favorite Looney Tunes character?
Bugs Bunny, of course.
Yeah.
Man.
You have a favorite Bugs cartoon?
There's a bunch, man. Like, if it's like the barber from Zaville.
How about a nice close shave? Teach your whiskers to behave. Lots of lather, lots of soap. Please hold still, don't be a dope. Now we're ready for the scraping. There's no use to try escaping. Yell and scream and rant and rave. It's no use, you need a shave.
I was a huge fan, not knowing the musicality of the show until later on, like, watching it again as an adult. Like, yo, this was, like, they use classical music. They use jazz in it. Like, the music that they choose for this was crazy, and I'm like, I'm a kid, like, absorbing all of this musicality. So I can only imagine, if I didn't have Looney Tunes, I probably wouldn't have been so inclined to love instrumentation and everything as much as I do now.
Wow. And one final thing, because I know you have a full day of press ahead of you. I've seen you do very good impressions of Drake.
Drake on The Wire? Yo, name it. Why you still at, man? Like, yo, like, man, that's not right, man. You know, you need to give that back. Where's your mom?
and of DJ Khaled.
Homie keeps honking his horn. I'm about to get out and say congratulations. You played yourself.
Who's next in your impersonation roster? Who are you working on?
I don't know, man. I got to figure it out. It'll be somebody, man. I got to look for my next victim.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
No, thank you,
Mac Wilds, for taking the time to talk to us, man. I really appreciate it. Man.
Thank you.
All right. Mac Wilds may be a familiar face to a lot of people, especially after Hello, but a lot fewer people have an idea about the scope of his talent and who he is. I think a lot of that came across in this interview. His album and his Remember Remember mixtape, which you can find on his SoundCloud page, are well worth checking out. There are very few people whose Michael Jackson cover can get the Teddy Riley seal of approval, after all. It was also fascinating to get a look at Mac's personal side, including his thoughts on Baltimore and his personal connection to Eric Garner. And of course, I loved hearing all about him introducing his 90210 loving family members to Brandon Walsh. Make sure to watch The Breaks on January 4th on VH1. It's a great movie, and there are rumors that it may even turn into a series. Join us next week when we talk to the Black Panther of rap, Paris. We discuss his start in the Bay Area rap scene, the controversy around Bushkiller, writing lyrics for your heroes, and a whole lot more. As I mentioned at the top, make sure you subscribe on your podcast app of choice. If that app happens to be iTunes, give us a rating or a review. If you want to take an extra step to support the show, you can make a donation at patreon.com/thecyphershow. Even a couple bucks a month will go a long way. You can find us everywhere on social media at The Cypher Show. Hit us up. Let us know what you thought of this episode, ideas for future guests, anything you'd want to talk about. More information about this or any other episode, including playlists and a lot more, can be found at thecyphershow.com. The Cypher is created and written by Sean Sotaro.
Huge, huge 90210 fans.
The show is produced and engineered by Josh Cross at Crosstown Studios.
I think Yoda was based on him.
Our music is by 42 Ghosts.
You know, he would sometimes let me come to the Village Underground and watch him sing and everything.
Our web guru is Aaron Young.
I'm not mad at it.
Special thanks to Patreon supporter Carl Petroff.
You can use what he says in other aspects of your life.
We'll see you next time around on The Cypher.
Yeah. Yo,
thank
man.
You so much.
That was a dope interview.
Thank you.